Hello and welcome to another episode of Theatre Voice from the Victoria and Albert Museum in London. Stuart Lang and Pamela Carter are one of Scottish theatre's most formidable pairings. While they work independently, Lang as a director, Carter as a writer, their collaboration is often more enmeshed than those words allow. Their shows can't easily be separated into their component parts. Lang and Carter's collaboration dates back to at least 2006, and the first incarnation of Slope, Carter's curious play about two 19th century poet lovers. Since then, often under the auspices of National Theatre of Scotland, they've created site-specific and semi-immersive pieces, and more latterly, turned their formal inventiveness towards adapting experimental novels. Most successfully, Paul Bright's Confessions of a Justified Sinner and Edouard Louis' The End of Eddie. The latter has just opened in New York, a mark of their work's international reach, born, I think, of its defiant and daring originality. That, in turn, comes from the nature of their collaboration itself. And the critic Mark Fisher went to find out just how they work together.
I think the work with Stuart has always been an opening gesture from Stuart to say, do you want to do this? You know, there's been an opening idea, whether that's I have... Slope was, I have this design, this already constructed model. I have this idea of, I'm interested in these poets. What do you reckon? And then you can, you know, the proceed from there. So I think from the beginning of the writing, from the beginning of the process, it's always, it begins with the two of us there, that it's not sitting alone. Not that I sit in a carrot, but
But the writing process, you
I do go away. I have to go away and write. Yeah, there's no.
I mean,
there's
it's
no,
not like we sit in a rehearsal room and devise something together.
It's really not that. So there's a lot of conversation. There's a lot of discussion about whether that's researching ideas or testing out ideas. Whether that's looking at images or what you want to see on stage, and then working out how that might work or how what form we might find to make that happen. But there is a certain point at which you have to go away and write something, and there are things that you have to find in writing that you can't set down at the beginning and go, it's just a point of, it's just filling out these ideas. There's a process there.
And what about that question of form that you just mentioned? Because one of the things that's, I would say, usually interesting in Stuart's work, and again, I've already mentioned Vanishing Point, but sometimes, quite often, you can be reinventing the wheel. You can say, well, what happens if the Salon Project? What happens if it's all about people dressing up and there's not actually a narrative? There could be all of those things, but or what happens if there's a movie in the middle of it, or what happens if there are ants? that's not necessarily a playwright's idea, is it?
The form the film that we made in An Argument About Sex, that was me going at the end of this. I'd like there to be a film in which we interview. So I don't really understand that's not the territory of an artist collaborating in that. You know, this idea that the playwright's only allowed to do this is slightly baffling, because we're making theatre. I'm not sitting down writing a book. And the only interest to writing is that it will take place in a theatre and it will be this experience, which is an event which begins and ends and has space and time and people and bodies in it. That's the thing that we're making, not generating a script. That's not the end point for me. So writing is part of that. Words are part of that. But there is structure, there's dramaturgy, and suppose this part that I'm a dramaturg as well, and I used to make my own, I used to devise my own work. So it's always been about the primary objective is the event, and then how do we achieve that event, or those ideas in the most fullest are most exciting and most interesting to us sort of way. I think there's something quite selfish about it, about not wanting to be bored.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, not being bored, I think, is a big part of it. Actually, I just read this morning an interview with Lars von Trier where he's talking about he has a library of things that give him pleasure. And he says that actually that is what his movies are about. You know, it is that you're not going to make a movie out of something that doesn't somehow give you pleasure. And I think it's the same with making theatre. You know, it's about things that give you pleasure.
And I realise I wandered off your question a bit, but the thing, I don't particularly enjoy writing, I have to say. I don't, that's not the thing. I like making theatre.
Mm-hmm.
And I think meaning, and it's about finding meaning. So if the way to get into complex ideas or to shape those is to write them, to bring, you know, as speech acts, as language, as dialogue, then that's all well and good. But I don't. It's and so I suppose in relation to sort of Vanishing Point, who I really worked as a dramaturg with, and then sort of marshalling text. It's a very that's a very different process. And sometimes I had to go, I refuse to write, because I don't think that's the point of this. So mm-hmm. I think with the second show I made, I agreed to do it as long as I guarantee that I wouldn't write anything. Eventually, I did write two sentences.
Those are the perfect sentences, though.
That's it. They did a job. So rather than being foolish, remember that there was something, the moment that needed to happen, and it was about action, and it was about sound. And so there were some words that were needed, and it was quite clear that you could sort of shape them in a certain way, but that was it.
And I'm thinking, I'm applying that idea to something like Paul Bright's Confessions of a Justified Sinner, which was as much an exhibition as it was a documentary footage, as it was a sort of lecture. And it's almost to me as if the meaning takes place not in any individual word, when there are lots of words there, but it's in the conflict of ideas and the clash of ideas and the themes, rather than the individual, if you like, poetry of it. It's not about beautiful language being shared in the way that Shakespeare might be.
No, it doesn't make much sense if you just, people have said, can you send us a script? It's pointless, really. The book is a good a way of accessing what we tried to make, but this just the script is fairly.
But you were really involved in what was in the exhibition as well. I mean, it was a sort of 3D dramaturgy. It wasn't just like, there were different layers of dramaturgy through that.
Because when I wrote it, I had two columns on the page. And so I was writing. In part, there was sometimes I had to write the film first and the scene at the same time, whereas one of the films, we could sort of speculate, this is the basic idea of what might happen in this film. So that's, say, the one where Brock Inspector and Glory on them. That was a, here's vaguely what Paul Bright did. Off you go, see what they can make on the site. But the film of the magazine programme, MB, it is MB.
It was called MB.
That I had to write the dialogue for that at the same time as writing the scene, because they refer to, so it's not something that's added in later, it's actually then the film is made after reconstructing what that dialogue is on the page. So it's working through various ways.
So you're correcting me on a lot of assumptions I must have made, I'm sure I've made over the years, and I'm sure a lot of people like me do make the same assumption, which is that, the writer's done the writerly bit and the director must have done the bit that doesn't involve words, but it's far broader than that.
It's much more of a conversation.
And I'm wondering, in both of your cases, Pamela, you'd worked as a producer as much as a sort of a creator, and you've worked, as you say, you've worked as a dramaturg, and Stuart starting off purely as a designer and moving into direction and design. Do you think that theatrical pedigree, if you like, has made you more fluid or made you more willing to not have to say, oh, I'm a designer, therefore I can only design, or I'm a writer, therefore I can only do words on the page?
Yes, yeah. As I think Kieran Hurley pointed out, that I'm badly paid in a number of different areas of the arts. So that's sort of like a jack of all trades and a master of none. And this is where we get to, it's a bit of a way of life, really, isn't it, rather than a particular sort of skill that I've sort of honed. It's and also being interested in things that aren't sitting at home in front of a computer. I think there's more fun to be had in the world.
I mean, it's sort of interesting talking about the way we work together, because I sort of think, like, each time we work together, the parameters are different.
They've changed, yeah.
It's not like there's a routine. I think when I approach a project, I want it to be different. I don't want to use the same process. I think that directors I think it's really clear who they are, like the directors who refine a process. I'm not interested in that. I'm really not interested in that. But because I want the rehearsal room to be a challenge. I don't want yet a process that I know is going to work.
And for both of you, when you're in that situation where you're deliberately making something that is not tried and tested by definition, there's the possibility that it won't work. And are you happy to live with that? Do you learn from those diversions that you've taken? Or is everything you've done perfect?
No, I think that for me, certainly, there's no searching for perfection. I think perfect art is just not interesting. Yeah, I like art that's messy. I like it when some bits of it don't quite add up. Who wants to engage with perfection? You know, it's like a mix between the theatre's an audience and a thing happening, and what happens between them. And I think if that thing there is perfect, then what does that leave for the audience?
For me, it's absolutely not about perfection, but I'm constantly trying to work out what works and why things work and why things don't work and how they work. And so it's an ongoing investigation of theatre, Stuart, art, ideas, how you find form for ideas, and if that wasn't the right form, maybe there's another form, and just like theatrical moments, go, oh, that didn't quite work in the way I wanted to, or I don't quite know why, but I just need to go and check back and then try and reformulate it in some other way. It's like having it's low boredom threshold and wanting to keep digging away at things.
Yeah, and I think it's also to do with making the best of what you have rather than having an idea of perfection. Mm-hmm. It's who's in the room? Let's make the best piece of work we possibly can with the people in the room, and let's not have a fantasy that perfection is going to suddenly creep into the room and bless us all.
Because wanting to be met or being happy with things that are messy and not seeking perfection isn't the same as saying you're trying to do something really rubbish or that you're hoping people aren't going to enjoy themselves.
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
There's an art to it. You see the great pieces of work that are supposedly messy, like Forced Entertainment. And
there's
a real artfulness in that.
Yeah.
Why I've ended up in theatre is, I think it's about the nature of collaboration and the family of theatre and the shared endeavour of theatre. There's the social aspects of it, and that has felt like making a family. And so while certain things are transient, actually there are ongoing relationships with people that have gone for years, and that's quite a beautiful thing, I think, and quite a nourishing, quite sustaining thing. I'd like to work in other forms as well, just because I think you have certain ideas that are better investigated in different forms. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like sometimes I think, in terms of my own writing, maybe theatre isn't the right place for it. Certainly, it would appear to be in certain senses. Maybe I need to find a form as a novel, or maybe it's a TV series or something that's, you know, there are better ways of investigating these feelings or ideas. But
yeah, I suppose I'm thinking in particular actually about Robert Lepage, who will create work in front of the audience, and there'll be bits that are a bit sketchy, and there's certainly bits that don't quite work, but he'll keep on working, and that always seems to me that, or someone like Phil Kay as a comedian, he'll be prepared to improvise his way into a complete corner, but then maybe improvise his way out and something glorious can happen, but also he can fall flat on his face. And I always think there must be something quite resolved or thick skin or whatever it might be to be able to be happy or content with yourself that some things don't work. And yes, lots of people were looking at me. Wasn't that embarrassing? Well, no, not really. I'll just go on and do the next thing. I just kind of think the more you're prepared to experiment, the more at risk of people saying, well, that was a load of rubbish.
Yeah, that's always the risk you take. but also to say, you know, sometimes it's painful. I mean, it's not like one has a tough skin.
No.
You know, sometimes you're licking your wounds for quite some time afterwards. Yeah. But that's still no reason not to take the risks, I think.
You don't think, right, I'll do an Alan, next time I'll do an Alan Ayckbourn and keep everybody happy.
Oh my God, I'd love to do an Alan Ayckbourn, but I don't think that doing an Alan Ayckbourn is going to keep people happy. I think if I did an Alan Ayckbourn play, it really would not be to make people happy. And I don't think anybody would let me do it anyway.
Well, I don't know.
I've introduced the idea now. We definitely I will go and see it.
Yeah.
It's not experimentation for experiment's sake. It's just sort of, I'm just doing the thing that it can do and getting by.
Yeah.
And functioning as an artist. And it just so happens that's what rolls out at the end of it. If what rolled out at the end of it was Jack Thorne series, or that would be great. I'd love to be, I'd love to be a different writer. But it's not a studied affectation. It's just doing the thing that I can do.
And what about when you work with other people? Because I've suggested that we should, all three of us should speak just now, because you've got a pretty long-standing collaboration. But both of you do work with other people. You're not wedded to each other. But how does it feel when you do work with other people? Is that just another way of doing another adventure into a different sort of form?
You get used to a certain kind of conversation and a certain knowledge, and actually it can be quite difficult, I find, to start in maybe what I realise is quite a more traditional world of playwriting. Go, oh, there are certain assumptions that are made about me as a writer here, and either I have to sort of work with those or sort of try and find a different way of having a conversation, or yeah, it's tricky, I think.
I think it's different being a director, though, because I don't work with a lot of other playwrights. I mean, I have worked
with... You work with classic plays, I suppose.
Or operas. And when I have done plays by other playwrights, I'm given a finished play to direct. So I don't have the relationship that I have with Pamela with anybody else, I don't think.
And does it feel like a different job to put on a Strindberg play or whatever it might be than something that is being created before your eyes in the rehearsal room?
It's a different thing. You know, if I'm working with Pamela, I'm trying not to be bored. And I'm doing a Jean Genet play, I'm trying not to be bored. And if I'm sitting there thinking, oh God, this is just like a play, then you do something to disrupt it. When I'm working with Pamela, it's like the disruption is built into it, is that somehow through the conversation, like the disruptive thing is actually there in it. And I think if I'm doing a Strindberg play or a Jenny play, then I need to fling the disruption into it while I'm directing.
Mm-hmm. And we can use at the moment the example of The End of Eddie because it's just about to go to New York, is that right?
Yeah,
in November.
Yeah.
And there, I guess, I wonder whether that's a sort of middle ground between the two sort of forms that we're talking about, in the sense that the book of The End of Eddie existed and you were adapting it, but at the same time, somehow between the two of you, you came up with the visual side of it, with televisions mm-hmm. on stage, because televisions were a theme in the book. You could speak specifically about where that idea came from.
The proposition came from Stuart. We'd like to adapt this book for a younger audience, and I wanted two actors. So there's already an approach there, which is breaking something apart, I think, from the book. And I've just really enjoyed writing for film and video. So I said, can we have video in it? And then we sort of talked, and then there are four TVs in the house, so we get, all right, we'll have four TVs on stage. And then, so as I'm writing, I've got four squares that I'm working with, as well as and some writing for the TVs and the, and that's actually just more interesting than just having dialogue on a page. So that's...
And also, on a really, really practical level, it means you can do a scene that involves five or six people with two live actors mm-hmm. on stage. Mm-hmm. And that, like, the economy of that, I think, is interesting.
And then we got to, well, of course, then you can have text on stage and just an image, you know, and on the screen, you can start to play in different ways. And that was, you know, really being really conscious of a younger audience. I was sort of going, how do you move it on every time, each scene? You just try and use the TV slightly differently, or, you know, something shifts in each way you present that story, that section.
And what was your input, Stuart, into that process? Was it Pamela just coming to you with all of those fantastic ideas, or were you sort of feeding back into her and saying, well, what if?
It's a conversation. Mm-hmm. It's going back and forth.
Yeah, we did. And because, so things like it will be the two actors and they won't be dressed up and there will be the names on, you know, that these things are coming back to me. You know, so Stuart's saying this is how mm-hmm, this is mm-hmm, how it should look mm-hmm. and no one should be pretending to be the mother and there shouldn't be, you know, different actors on in the screens. And so that's absolutely a conversation. And then we did two workshops as well.
And in that way, the theatricality is built into the script. It's not a literary thing that you're handing over. And there's the interaction with the technology and Stuart's ideas and the actor's ideas or whatever is all goes to create the three-dimensional temporal thing that is a piece of theatre.
Yeah. I mean, that's.
Which I'm kind of thinking that would be different if you decide to put rock and roll guitars in a Jean Genet play, then Genet has no say in that. That's just you doing that. But if you tried to do that with something that Pamela's written, then she could say, well, no, that's not working, or that could be, or what a fantastic idea we could have this as well.
But then in that situation with a Jean Genet play, then there are different people you're having that conversation with. Then you're having a very, very different conversation with your actors. Or on that Jean Genet play, I was working with Alan McKendrick, was a dramaturg on it. So there were lots of conversations with Alan. I can't do anything on my own. I really can. Mm-hmm. Like, even sitting in the studio model making on my own, I find really, really hard. It's like I need somebody else there. Like, I need the conversation to actually make anything happen. I find it really, really hard to motivate myself on my own. Yeah, theatre's not about one person's idea. I just don't think it is. I think that maybe the interesting thing about theatre is that genius isn't in, if you believe in genius, that genius isn't in one person.
Mm-hmm.
That somehow the culmination of that group of people is maybe genius. And I think that's much more interesting and more modern in terms of making work.
Well, this is it. I think writing is a speculation, and so when I find it a little bit difficult, maybe trying to work in the more traditional model or being commissioned by theatres who work in the more traditional model, I forget that what I do is not than maybe the standard way of working. So I get a little bit frustrated when I go, well, can't you see this is a draft?
Mm-hmm.
And this is also about space. What I'm talking about here is space. So we need to have a conversation with someone who understands space and who understands that this is just a step on from, you know, it's a step towards something. And I think what often I get is people go, I don't know what this is on the page, I have no idea. And then the conversation ends. And so that's why I find that quite tricky, is operating in that, in the other world of playwriting.
From Stuart, from your point of view, is what Pamela's saying, the reason that you haven't got a long list of other playwrights, living playwrights that you've worked with, because she has a particular aesthetic that happens to fit with yours? A working method.
I think that's I think that's true.
Well, also I think you've taught me quite a lot. So when I first met Stuart, you know, I was only just starting out.
Because
I wrote my first play. It was a couple of years before that I met Stuart. Yeah. So, and I asked to watch Stuart directing. So that was when I was I was assistant to Anthony Nielsen as a director, and I went to watch Stuart. And so I've learnt, I think, as well as, you know, there are clearly things that we had in common, lots of things that we had in common, but also I've sort of learnt a lot more. And so maybe is that duration, you know, the duration of sort of being with you and also sort of being able to sort of follow your work has enabled certain things and ways of questioning.
And Stuart, do you, because you've got a design background, you started off as a designer, would you say that you, if this is possible, do you direct visually?
Oh my God, completely, I mean, it's not to say that I'm not listening to the words, but I think that theatre is a visual art form. It's got words in it, but it's completely visual.
Yeah, I agree. Theatre, it's a place to speculate. Yeah, theatron, it's spectator, theastai, it's Greek for spectator.
Even something as simple as, like, the way we're sitting at this table is, like, part of what we're doing is the shape that we're making with the three of us and who we're looking at when we're speaking and what our hands are doing. And I think that is as much of it as the words that are going in there.
Yeah. Sadly for the listeners at home, they're going to be able to appreciate the fantastic triangle that we've created.
But yeah, I do. I think it is. Just like whether two people are near each other or far away from each other on a stage, I think is,
And then the two of you have experimented with physically where the audience is in relationship to that, sloping, a prime example where the first version of it, the audience was actually above the actors looking down at it, and you've done things with the audience scattered around the room, around the space.
It's sort of acknowledging that you're in the same space as the audience, rather than in a different space from the audience.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that's even when the audience is like sitting in one half of the room looking at the people doing the theatre on the other half, I think we still try and acknowledge the fact that that the audience is there.
Yeah, absolutely. And as a writer, I always imagine we are in a theatre. I'm not going, we're in a kitchen in 1985, and there is the tap dripping. It's written to be in a theatre.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think I've only ever written one naturalistic play, and that was 10 years ago.
Which one was that?
That's Skona.
Oh, right, okay.
So that was the... Yeah, and I genuinely did, actually. That was the only time I sat down and go, this is a farmhouse, this is a field. But yeah, everything else has been...
And didn't feel inclined to repeat that? Or haven't so far?
I'd love to, because I really love that play. But I just, when I've tried, I just haven't been convinced by it at all. And I'm less and less convinced by it. It doesn't feel truthful to me in any way, not recognising that there's somebody, there are people sat there and that you can talk to them and there's, you know, you can send yourself through hoops and sending yourself into knots to try and make this as real as possible by pretending that the people really are there aren't there at all. Do you know what I mean? It seems ridiculous.
And I think it's interesting that even TV and film now, or it feels like film and television is very, very aware that there's a camera mm-hmm. there and that there's an audience watching this edited thing.
Even something as mainstream as Mrs. Brown's Boys does that. They pull back and show the cameras and
Like The Big Short, you know.
How do you get that information in? Other than just stopping everything and going, let's talk about algorithmic trading for a bit. Let's talk about credit default swaps. Rather than let's find a situation in which two people just happen casually to have a conversation
like Dogville. I think that when people try and separate out art forms, that it's often a fuzzy line, actually.
Well, there's a good question then. Is it an act of deliberate thinking to say, right, I want to do something different all the time? Or is it just that sort of restless desire to entertain yourself, entertain other people, that mean that everything, pretty much everything you do, takes a new form?
I think it's a bit of both. I think it's a bit of both. And also, when you've done something in one way, then people come and ask you, and there's a sort of suggestion that you'll do that sort of thing with something else. So it's often just by saying no, you're often defining what you'll do.
And do you like challenging each other for that, in that way, surprising each other? Is it not as deliberate as that?
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
And we don't have the conversation that is, oh, let's do something like Slope again. Can we do another play with three historical figures in it?
And a really nice frock.
And actually, when you did do Slope again, you did it in a completely different way by using the internet and
There'd be no point in doing Slope again in the same way. That was a very deliberate thing of sort of thinking, well, that play is bigger than a bathroom.
And then going back and rewriting with a new proposition of, one, you have a small room and you're in the room with the audience, but two, there's the internet broadcast as well. It was really interesting going back and examining the mechanics of the dialogue were and why it didn't work to do it the same way, so to rewrite it. That was actually, I enjoyed doing that. The challenge of that was great.
Because the context then shifts it and it's a new set of...
The relationship with the audience is entirely different. And actually what I realised is particularly in the first act, basically I'd written a play which is just people walking in and out of a room, which was great because the room was gorgeous. You were looking down to it, you were in a really exciting place. But as soon as you take away that structure, you've just got people fanning in and out of a room. So you have to find a different reason for them to be there, and actually then the dialogue has to get a little bit stronger. But because we've got film as well, you can start to cut away from... You can cut away and cut into something else, and it opened up more opportunities for me in terms of writing.
I've got a question that's bubbling in my head about internationalism, and I don't know whether I'm going to articulate it correctly, but I'm kind of... making a connection between your background in Suspect Culture, for example, and Vanishing Point, both got a sort of a very international perspective on creating work in Scotland. I'm thinking as well, most recently saw Stuart at the Manchester International Festival with as an audience member watching stuff that was coming from around the world. Your work is going around the world. Is that outside perspective, international perspective, important to you, relevant to you?
For me, like, some of the first theatre I saw was at the Edinburgh Festival. You know, I grew up like 40 miles away from the Edinburgh Festival, and if you wanted to see theatre, you know, you could go to the Edinburgh Festival, and that's what theatre was. You know, it wasn't like, oh, go and do seek out this different thing. It was like, that's what was
what
there
was.
And then also I think, like, living in Glasgow through the 90s with the work that was coming to Tramway.
I mean,
that was pretty mind-blowing. So it's like that is the theatre that was there to see. It wasn't like necessarily like seeking it out. It's the theatre that just happened to be on our doorstep.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I saw Pina Bausch at Café Müller in 92 at the Edinburgh International Festival, and that absolutely blew my mind, and that sent me in a certain direction, which was towards live art. So that's what I did my master's degree in. And actually, the National Review of Live Arts in Glasgow, the dear departed.
That just happened to be there.
The most exciting work I've seen, was always, it was German, it was Belgian. So I have to say, it's nothing to do with the companies that I work for, but absolutely about what I've loved seeing.
By your answer, I determine that it's in your DNA, it's in your blood, that stuff. It's not like an aesthetic you've taken on, that's just what your definition of theatre is.
Yeah.
Or your idea, what gets you excited.
Yeah. Like, people ask me why I was interested in being moving from being a designer to being a director. But the very, very first theatre I saw was at the Sitz when I was like 14 years old. And there was a credit on the programme that said directed and designed by. And I thought that was a job.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I think that's what I want to be. It's like my experience of how you made theatre was this thing that was dramatic and dynamic and looked really good as well.
I did a master's degree at Central School of Speech and Drama in 1994-95, and it was run then by a woman called Susan Melrose, and our external was Tim Etchells for Four Sen. We were talking about Garza Nietzsche Theatre and reading, Schechner, and as well as, you had to read Derrida and Lyotard. She was a big post-structuralist. And that actually, that year and a half, that 2 years, sort of, I think, formed my mind. And it's before I moved to, then I moved to Glasgow. So I think there was something about that course, the insistence on learning from world theatres, and maybe, mostly European theatre, actually, and an academic, the input of that and sort of the performance analysis of that, I think that's what sort of make then I just assumed that all theatre should be that's what all theatre was, and maybe it's always been a bit of a shock when I've realised it's not. But arriving in Glasgow, and actually I think the woman that Professor Susan Melrose, I think she recommended that I go to Glasgow University to start a PhD, which I never quite finished, because she was looking at all the theatre at Tramway and going, this is probably where you want to be if you're interested in different kinds of theatre.
Theatre Voice is an audio archive about British theatre. You can subscribe to our weekly podcast on iTunes or visit our website theatrevoice.com for hundreds of recordings with some of the world's leading theatre makers. This episode was presented by Mark Fisher and produced by Matt Truman and Helen Gush for the Victoria and Albert Museum in London. Thanks for listening.